The United States is the premier nuclear power in the world, but the geopolitical landscape has radically transformed since the height of the Cold War. Meanwhile, our stockpile of ballistic missiles, nuclear submarines, and large bombers is aging and in need of expensive upgrades and replacements. So, as America moves forward in the 21st century, what kind of nuclear arsenal makes sense? Here to help us answer that is Steve Pfeiffer. Steve is the former ambassador to Ukraine and director of the Brookings Arms Control Initiative at the Washington, D.C. think tank. Welcome, Ambassador Pfeiffer.
Thank you. Happy to be here.
Appreciate it. Before we get into the details, can you give us a sense of the scale we're talking about here? I'm sure the exact number is a guarded secret, but about how many nuclear warheads does the U.S. maintain?
Well, actually, it's not a secret. In 2010, the United States released a number and said that as of September 2009, the total American stockpile was 5,113 weapons.
Okay.
Which is a huge decrease from the Cold War. At the height of the Cold War, there were 25 or 30,000 weapons. But you still have to ask the question, does that number make sense 20 years after the end of the Cold War and the collapse of the Soviet Union?
What about the dollar cost of maintaining that arsenal?
The dollar cost in terms of maintaining them on a day-to-day status is estimated at, say, $30 to $40 billion a year. So it's a part of the defense budget.
Wow.
But where the costs get really big is if you look, say, 5 or 7 years down the road, where the Navy's going to have to start building a new ballistic missile submarine to replace the Ohio-class submarines, which have to be retired in about 15 years. And then you're talking about an estimate of $6 to $7 billion per boat, not counting the missiles or the torpedoes.
So upgrades are hugely expensive.
Well, or replacements. I mean, a submarine can basically operate for about 35 years, but then it just gets to the point where you've got to retire it. So you have to build a new submarine.
Okay.
And they're trying to find a way to cut that cost, but shipbuilding prices usually go up.
Are we still producing more nuclear weapons, or has production of new nuclear weapons stopped?
Well, when you talk about the nuclear weapons per se, actually, we don't produce new nuclear weapons now. What the policy is, we extend the life of existing weapons. So they'll do what's called a life extension program, where they'll take an existing weapon and they'll go and replace those parts that have basically reached their shelf life, but basically keep the same weapon intact. And one of the things that we've learned in the last 10 years is that nuclear weapons in the American stockpile actually have much longer longevity than had been anticipated, say, 25 years ago.
Okay. But again, we're getting back to the number. We're talking a little north of 5,000.
Come down to maybe in the last 4 or 5 years. The guess is it's probably come down to more like around 4,600, 4,700.
Okay. Okay.
So it's moving down.
The other key player here is Russia. It's Russia and the United States. Even after a new START treaty is implemented, Russia will still have at least 2,000 nuclear weapons, from what I'm told, and plus an untold number of non-strategic weapons, likely numbering in the thousands as well. What is Russia's place in this discussion?
Yeah, the guess is that Russia has about 5,000 to 1,000 total nuclear weapons, so roughly the same as the United States. And this is one of the issues about the new START treaty, which President Obama and then President Medvedev signed in 2010, is that treaty, which is a good step, it limits each side to about 1,550 deployed strategic warheads, but it only covers those strategic warheads that are deployed. It doesn't address reserve weapons or tactical weapons. So it covers only about 30% of the U.S. arsenal, and maybe it's time for the United States and Russia to begin talking about limits on all of their weapons.
And I misspoke a minute ago. I guess the new START treaty has been implemented already. Okay. All right. Just last Friday, the United States decided to restructure its European missile defense approach. How does this alter the situation involving Russia?
Well, it remains to be seen, but for the last couple of years, Russians have been not enthusiastic about reductions going beyond those that they've already agreed to in the new START treaty, which is now being implemented. I think the Obama administration would like to reduce further. One of the reasons the Russians have said they did not want to reduce is because of concern about the American missile defense plans for Europe. And phase four, the last phase, which is the one of most concern to Russia, was canceled last week by the Defense Department. So hopefully that removes an obstacle that then might allow a resolution of differences on missile defense, which then could remove an obstacle to further negotiations. Now, the initial word out of Moscow is not encouraging, But the Russians often react very slowly to ideas. As one of my colleagues once said, the Russians say no, no, no until they say yes. So hopefully we haven't heard the final word.
How have our allies in Eastern Europe responded to what we've just announced, or what you just referred to?
The first three phases were primarily aimed at defending Europe. So in phase two, there would be a missile interceptors in Romania. In phase three, there'd be interceptors in Poland. Now, those will go ahead, and those interceptors will have the ability to protect Europe. Phase four was going to be, though, a much more capable interceptor that could intercept intercontinental ballistic missiles coming from Iran to the United States. So, and basically, I think what the Defense Department has concluded, there's probably a more efficient way to defend against the United, to protect the United States. So this plan doesn't affect the ability of missile interceptors to defend Europe. What we've done is we've canceled phase four as we looked for a more efficient way to defend the United States.
But does the cancellation of phase four, does that amount to some kind of olive branch to the Russians or anyone else?
Well, it's interesting. When you talk to people in the government, they say the cancellation was driven by technical questions about phase four and budget questions. They say Russia was not a consideration. But it has to have occurred to somebody in the government on the U.S. side that if we cancel this, which the Russians have been complaining about for 3 years, that has to have some kind of a positive impact on Moscow.
You referred to Iran just a second ago. We've got to talk about Iran. We've got to talk about North Korea. Sure. What about the threats that they pose, and how does that figure into this?
Yeah. Well, a part of the decision that was announced on Friday would be to deploy additional interceptors in Alaska, which will give the United States some measure of protection against North Korea. Now, one of the things the Defense Department said they're going to do is they're going to test and prove the technology before they actually deploy new interceptors, which is a good step. Because I think some of the interceptors that were deployed in Alaska were actually put into the field before they'd been fully tested. So there's some questions, how capable are these things? But that gives us some measure of protection against North Korea. Now, remember, North Korea, they've had one successful satellite launch. They're still probably a number of years from having a missile that could reliably reach the United States. And I think Iran is further behind. So the missile defense conversation in the United States has been...
Is further behind?
Yeah. It'll take Iran longer to get a missile that could reach the United States than it will take North Korea.
So. Okay. But that's geography, right?
It's geography, right? Yeah. Iran now can fly missiles maybe to 2,000 kilometers, but they need to get 5,000 miles to get to the United States. And that's just a longer way down the road. And the debate about missile defense, or what the U.S. government is trying to do, is basically stay ahead of that, is have missile defenses deployed before North Korea and Iran would get missiles that could reach the United States. And so far, I think that's a race that the U.S. probably can do fairly well in, if they get the missile defenses to work.
If reducing the overall nuclear threat is priority number one, if we assume that that is the goal, what needs to happen here in the short-term future?
Well, I think the biggest thing that the United States could do is working with Russia is to reduce our stockpiles. Because while the United States and Russia each have about 5,000 nuclear weapons, the nearest third power is France with only 300. And it's very hard, I think, for the United States and Russia to go to third countries and say, don't build up. Yeah. Or go to a country like Iran and say, don't acquire nuclear weapons when we have such a large inventory ourselves. Now, if we are reducing our arsenals, I think that probably is not going to affect directly a change of mind in North Korea or Iran. But what it does do is it gives us greater credibility with other countries to apply pressure on North Korea and Iran. So I don't think it's a coincidence that in the last 3 years, when we've had the New START Treaty, the United States has had more success in persuading other countries to crank up economic and financial sanctions on Iran.
What's the acceptable level? I mean, you threw out this 4,700 number most recently here. What number makes most sense in your view?
Well, I think the next step in a U.S.-Russian negotiation only would be to try to get all nuclear weapons and try to come down to about 2,000, maybe total weapons. I think it would be hard to get the Russians to go much below that without bringing in third countries, which I would say for the next step, because once you bring in third countries, your negotiation becomes much more complex.
Okay.
Ultimately, I'm a member of Global Zero. I think if we could reach a world where we could be confident that there were no nuclear weapons, which would require huge verification measures beyond what we have now, an enforcement mechanism, I think from an American perspective, that world has some attraction. We have friendly neighbors in Canada and New Mexico, the protection afforded by the Pacific and the Atlantic Oceans, and very powerful conventional forces. So, and that would avoid the risks that I think are growing of use of nuclear weapons as more countries acquire them. But that's a long way down the road, and a lot has to happen to get there.
That was Steve Pfeiffer, former ambassador to the Ukraine and director of the Brookings Arms Control Initiative at the Washington, D.C. think tank.